Never know how much I love you. Never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the morning, a fever all through the night.
Peggy Lee cast a spell when she sang. She hypnotized, even on television. She epitomized cool, but her trademark song, Fever, covered by Beyoncé and Madonna, is the essence of sexual heat. Her jazz sense dazzled Ray Charles, Duke Ellington, and Louis Armstrong. She was the voice of swing, the voice of blues, and she provided four of the voices for Walt Disney's Lady and the Tramp, whose score she co-wrote. With interviews with hundreds who knew Peggy Lee, acclaimed music journalist James Gavin has a revealing look at an artist of infinite contradictions and layers. Peggy Lee was a North Dakota prairie girl who became a temptress of enduring mystique. She died in 2002 at the age of 81, but the fascination that we as a culture have in Peggy Lee has only grown since. James Gavin's new book is That All There Is? The Strange Life of Peggy Lee, and we welcome him to the roundtable this morning. James, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
Very nice to have you aboard. Always a pleasure to have you on the program. So well, let me ask the obvious question. The first thing that I asked when I picked up the book before I started reading it was, why is this life strange? And
well, Peggy Lee lived in a dream world. From the time she was a small child, she looked around at what she considered to be a Dickensian childhood of great horror and great desolation and great emptiness. And she decided that she would create her own reality. And the reality that she created was very Cinderella-like. It included an evil stepmother who forced her into indentured servitude. It included a Prince Charming later on, who was the guitarist in the Benny Goodman Orchestra, in which she sang. And it included many, many layers of fantasy. Peggy Lee, I often wonder how much of it she actually believed. I think that she pulled off this fantasy approach to life about 90% of the time, and the remaining 10% that she didn't pull off was the monster that nipped at her heels for her whole life. All of this was going on underneath that cool, sexy, placid, Mona Lisa-like style. That is what always fascinated me so much about Peggy Lee.
Talk a little bit about the monster nipping at her heels.
Well, I always feel that if you successfully live in a life of delusion, then you're perfectly happy because you can redesign reality to fit your own specifications. But underneath it all, I feel that Peggy Lee really knew the truth. This was a woman who became famous for withholding. She became famous for a sense of secrets in her singing. There was so much going on in those eyes that you couldn't quite put your finger on, but you could sense. And Peggy was a woman who, according to, for example, Mike Stoller, who co-wrote Is That All There Is, the title song of my book, he felt that Peggy ran on anger. A lot of this was pointing back to that childhood we've referenced earlier,
right,
which included, among other things, a very, very difficult, hardscrabble, prairie, depression-era struggle to survive. It included a mother who died when Peggy was 4 years old and who she barely knew but built up in her mind as being this perfect angel protector figure. And then, of course, her father remarried. Her father was a railroad man, big brood of kids. He needed help. He remarried and found a stern, almost ogreish German woman to run the household, and she and Peggy crossed swords to the point where Peggy, in later years, built her into this true Gorgon figure who made her life miserable for many years and gave her a big reason to get the hell out of North Dakota, which Peggy Lee did when she was 17.
In getting out, how much was music her ticket?
Oh, it was the reason she survived. She discovered that she had a gift for communicating. Peggy had a very tiny voice in execution. However, she had the ability to belt. Belting was not in her, it wasn't her MO. It was part, I think it was part of her innate Scandinavian restraint. It was part of the way one lived in North Dakota in those years when the winters were so hard, when life was so tough, that you couldn't, there was no point in complaining. Everybody had no money. Everybody was in the same boat. And yet, it didn't mean you weren't suffering. It didn't mean there wasn't turmoil going on. And Peggy, all of this mixed together created a style that really set Peggy apart, because unlike most of the other, for example, girl band singers of the day, who sang in a very forthright, very matter-of-fact style, Peggy sang so softly that even in a big ballroom with a big band roaring behind her, she was singing so quietly that you had to pull in closely to hear her. You had to concentrate. And she drew you into a world that was very sort of mystical, sort of strange, and it set your imagination aflame. And all of this set her apart in those days. Benny Goodman spotted it when he heard her singing in a little Chicago cocktail lounge in about 1941. He needed a girl singer fast. The previous one had quit in hating him, Helen Forrest. And so he hired Peggy, and at that point, Peggy Lee became a national star.
You talk in the book, as you were saying this a few moments ago, about her childhood. And what was fascinating is that she would tell these stories about being abused and with being hit over the head with a frying pan and trying to poison herself.
Yes.
And drinking bleach. And in talking to childhood friends, that you didn't find any evidence of that, that there were never, that she never mentioned the beatings, which doesn't mean they didn't happen, but there's some disconnectivity there. But what you do point out is that she could spin a tale, and then at some point she would start to believe the story that she was making up.
That was part of the 90% of Peggy that was able to rewrite reality in order to live with it. You know, the childhood beatings have become a part of the Peggy Lee mythology. After her stepmother died in the early 70s, she began telling those stories about that were so outlandish, and yet Peggy was so convincing that nobody really questioned them. And one of the great coups of my book is the fact that I was able to find Peggy Lee's best childhood friend from the tiny town of Nortonville, North Dakota, still alive and living in Northern California, just turned 95. She was Peggy's best friend from 1928 to 1934, which were the key years of the alleged abuse. And this woman has more marbles in her head now than I ever had. And she remembers those days vividly. She was with Peggy Lee almost daily, Norma Dolores Eggstrom at that time. And she said that she never saw a hint of physical abuse executed. There was never a scratch, a scar. She was around the house all the time. Others in Peggy Lee's family agreed with that. Emotional abuse was going on, yes, because these two women, one of them, an older, you know, a battle axe, and little fair blonde Norma were at each other's throats. But I don't believe that it in a physical sense.
And the other thing here that is important to note, I guess, is that here's a woman who was married four times, and she and you talk about these were all fairly brief relationships, but you keep coming back in the book to this of how she would fill the loneliness and the void with sex. And that there were numerous affairs, there were numerous hookups, and that was just a part of her life.
Yeah, she was lonely. She was a lonely woman. It's so interesting to me, Joe, that many of the great women of romantic song, the women of the stage who sing so knowingly about love to hundreds or thousands of strangers, go home to an empty house. The first marriage Peggy Lee had to Dave Barber, the Benny Goodman guitarist, the love of her life. Dave left Peggy after about 8 or 9 years. The other marriages were short indeed. And I think there was an emptiness inside Peggy Lee that could never be filled. It's really what she sings about in Is That All There Is. There was a reason why Peggy had such a deeply emotional connection to that song as soon as she heard it. And yet, let's break out the booze and have a ball if that's all there is. It does indicate a glimmer of hope. This was a woman who had an instinct for self-destruction and an instinct for survival that were running on parallel tracks all her life, and they were constantly sparring with each other. Peggy made it to the age of 81, which is almost miraculous given the physical traumas that she had put herself through up until that time.
The name of the book is That All There Is? The Strange Life of Peggy Lee. It is published by Atria Books. James Gavin is the author of the book. James, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
I'm delighted to speak with you. Thank you so much for your time,
Jeff. Always a pleasure. Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.